This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. It seems like everyone has a story about their homeowners association, an HOA. As you know, sometimes we hear these stories about a power-crazy person who runs their association with over-the-top enforcement of the rules about mowing your grass and bringing in your trash cans and keeping political signs out of the way. But ignore those fines at your own peril. The HOA has the power to take your home right from under your feet. According to the Community Association Institute, more than 63 million Americans live in communities managed by HOAs. HOAs in Texas are largely unregulated, with no state oversight, and tales of abuse are rampant. There are stories of embezzlement, mismanagement, and extortion. So how can you fight back against an HOA without turning your neighbors against you? We want to hear your stories about the HOAs that you live in. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And in the next half hour, we will be talking about expanding the MPO and transportation planning here in the region. But first, this hour, HOAs. And in the studio, we have Express News business reporter Patrick Danner. He has been writing about the HOAs and uncovered some shady dealings of HOAs and selling of seized properties on the steps of the Bexar County Courthouse. And on the phone, we have Evan McKenzie. He is professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and the author of Beyond Privatopia, Rethinking Residential Private Government. Welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, so let me ask you, Professor McKenzie, HOAs, How do we end up with HOAs? What are they supposed to do? What's the upside of an HOA?
Well, they came into existence a long time ago, way back in the 1800s, but there were very few of them, fewer than 500, really, until probably the 1960s and early 70s. And as what happened was that developers started to become more concerned about the high cost of developing land, the land costs. And so they wanted to get more people on less land, higher density, and cities at the same time were concerned about tax resistance and tax protest movements. So the cities were looking for ways to develop and grow without having to build a whole lot of public utilities that would require raising taxes. So they kind of put their heads together, and what has been developed is the idea of basically a private government, a local private government that often owns and maintains the private services and utilities. It can be water, sewer, streets, recreation facilities, all these things. But from the municipality standpoint, it's a great deal because they get full property tax payments from these owners, but they don't have to provide the same level of services, which are provided through an extra payment of assessments to your association. So you have a little private government of the volunteers running these associations and like a little tiny municipality, and the local government becomes a beneficiary, and developers like it because it helps them market properties.
And that model still works? That's the model that we have today still?
Yes, but that is exactly what's happening. But it's a form of local government privatization. But it wasn't done sort of the way privatization is normally done, where you analyze the costs and the benefits and keep track of it and have provisions for accountability and make sure that let's say if you privatize trash collections that the trash is really being collected. This just sort of grew up in sort of an ad hoc way. And by the 1990s, there were hundreds of thousands of these associations. And only now are we, in the last 10, 15 years, are state governments beginning to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, don't we need some kind of a regulatory framework? And don't we have to protect owners somehow? Because these associations and their professionals have a lot of power over them.
Yeah, they're able to tell folks what color they can paint their homes and if they can put up a fence or not. They have to mow their grass. And there's a lot of power and a lot of control, and I don't get it. I don't know why people would be willing to sign up for that.
Well, often, yes. Many people, once they move into an association and the association tells them they can't do something, they become very irate about it, and they say they don't think it's legitimate, they don't think it's fair. And this is what often leads to conflict in associations, is people saying, well, I don't think my neighbor should be able to order me around like this. But the problem is you really have to make that decision before you move in, because these are contractual agreements. When you buy a unit in an HOA-run development, you are consenting to all those rules and regulations. You're consenting, in fact, to being governed by your neighbors through the association. And it is legally enforceable. And so most people just really don't get it at the time they buy, and only later do they find out what's really going on.
When you talk about these HOAs, immediately comes to mind is the classic film Raisin in the Sun with Sidney Poitier. And when the family, the African-American family, they're going to move out to the suburbs, and the HOA representative comes to their house and tries to buy them out to keep them from going out there. Is there some remnant of this racist background in HOAs?
Oh, very much so. In the first book I wrote on this topic back in the 90s, I documented a lot of that. There's no doubt that property owners and homeowners associations, many of them, were created, particularly in the early 20th century, in the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s, with the express purpose of enforcing racial restrictive covenants, prohibitions on selling your property to African Americans and other minorities as well. And so that was one of the reasons for the creation of HOAs in certain parts of the country. Absolutely, there's no doubt about it. But later on, after those, the enforcement of those covenants became illegal, HOAs, of course, were no longer able to do things like that, and developers couldn't use them for those purposes, and so now those covenants are no longer valid.
All right, we're going to go to the phones real quick. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Let's get Mary on the phone. Mary, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. I heard you say where you would not want to live in one of these HOA communities, and I live in one, so I feel comfortable that my property value may not go down because the expectations of my neighbors is the same expectation I have on myself, to keep my yard mowed, to put my trash cans away, to take care of my neighborhood. And I bought specifically in that for that purpose. And I do know some people don't like those types of rules. Unfortunately, they buy into the neighborhoods that have those rules, and then they like to complain about them. So that's the problem that I see, is when they don't understand that that neighborhood looks really nice because there are rules that make it so.
Okay, Mary. And so people need to know what they're getting into, right?
Yes.
All right. And so, and you really like your HOA. You like your neighborhood looking spick and span?
I do.
Awesome.
I do. I actually have 3 homeowners association fees that I pay.
And so I'm good for you. I'm glad you're happy with all that situation, and that's great that you can do that. And so Professor, you know, Mary likes the situation. Works for her.
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing about that is that it isn't just that people buy into associations and they should have chosen to go elsewhere. In many parts of the country, and that would include large parts of Texas for certain, all the new land, all the new housing is in HOAs because municipalities are often requiring that all new construction has to be in HOAs, or developers won't build anything else.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation talking about HOAs. We're going to check in with the San Antonio Express News, an expose they wrote about HOA activity here in San Antonio. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about homeowners associations, HOAs. There's so many of them. They say that 1 in 5 people in the United States live in one, and they've done polling, and they said that 60% of the people live in an HOA aren't too happy about the situation, aren't too happy about the loss of some of their freedoms and their freedom of expression and freedom to paint their house any which way that they want. But they are a reality in America. We're talking about them, and we want to hear your stories about HOAs. Give us a call, 614-8980. Let's get Michael on the line. Michael, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you. I had just 2 comments. One about the discrimination. I'm a real estate agent, and I've seen a lot of CC&Rs or deed restrictions for properties that have sold, and I've seen more than you would think that the original documents are provided along with amendments, and the original documents say things like no colors. There's neighborhoods, Alma Heights, Belmead, that I've seen this in. And, of course, they are amended, but it's just it was shocking to me to see that that was ever the case. I was born in the 60s and didn't really have exposure to that discrimination. But the other thing is about hidden fees. The state of Texas, according to the state of Texas, the homeowner association has to provide copies of their deed restrictions and things to the homeowner at no charge. However, when a house is sold, part of the real estate contract says that there's also going to be what's called a retail certificate, and it's a two-page sort of a summary or snapshot of the health of the HOA, how much is in their budget, any assessments coming down the pike, any lawsuits against the association, and then there's also some specific information. Are there any fines or anything being levied against a specific property that's for sale, like, you know, a fence that is supposed to be replaced or anything like that? The state of Texas says that these HOA management companies can charge a reasonable fee, but they don't say what is reasonable. And it's a big ripoff. I've seen HOAs that manage themselves and charge $100, which I think is probably steep, but I can see it when you compare it to what the majority of them charge, which is upwards of $350, $500. I've seen them as high as $800. And that is simply for the HOA to fill out this two-page document and send it to the title company. And I think it's a rip-off, and I think more controls need to be placed on that, because you don't, you know, it's one of those things you don't find out until you're moving and you're leaving that HOA, so you go, well, I don't care. I'm not going to live there anymore. But the truth is, it, probably where you're going to buy is going to have the same thing, and it's just a huge cash cow for these HOAs. And that's all I wanted to say.
All right, Michael, thank you so much for your phone call. Appreciate that. So let me ask you, Evan McKenzie, professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, you've studied this. So these HOAs, there is a lack of transparency, and they do seem to sometimes, you know, get people to pay up.
Right. The myth is that these are these little volunteer-run local democracies. The reality is that the volunteers can't run these associations. They don't know how in most cases, so they turn to professionals like management companies and lawyers and others. And those professionals have found these associations to be very, very lucrative. And they come up with these ideas of charging all kinds of fees to the owners and to everyone else they deal with. And they've set up their own insurance companies, their own banks, one-stop shopping, daycare centers, website. I mean, they find ways to make the owners pay for all sorts of things, which is why it's so important to understand that it isn't just people who want to live in associations who live in them. It is increasingly everyone who wants to buy a new house, because if municipalities and developers take all the choice out of the housing market, then everybody ends up in these HOAs, and whether they like it or not. And not only does that produce conflict, but it provides a source of income for all these professionals who are finding creative ways to charge people for things.
All right. They're talking about all these fees and what happens if you don't pay these fees. So let's bring in Patrick Danner. He's a business reporter for the San Antonio Express News. He has recently written about HOAs and what happens when people don't pay their fines, their fees, and their property can be seized and then sold on the steps of the Bexar County Courthouse. Welcome to The Source, Patrick.
Thank you, David.
So tell me, how does it what's happening here? Is the property's not being sold? What is actually what's being sold?
The house or the property itself. In essence, in Texas, if you don't pay your HOA assessments, the HOA has the power to foreclose. And so a person who hasn't paid a few hundred dollars in assessments can end up losing their home.
And we have a company here in San Antonio that's been doing really well by picking up these properties on the – when we say steps of the courthouse, it really is the steps of the courthouse. That's just not a turn of a phrase.
Right. It's literally on the courthouse steps. It's the first Tuesday of every month.
And they have these auctions.
Right. They're conducted by the attorneys for the HOAs. And at that auction, you can anybody can bid, and it's perfectly legal. And generally, we focused on one company called DTND Sierra Investments, LLC, which has bought close to 186 properties on the courthouse steps over the last few years. And they've generally paid about a dollar more than what the HOAs are owed in overdue assessments and attorney's fees. Generally, when people don't pay their HOA fees, the HOA will send them a notice, and if they still don't pay, they will hand it off to their attorney, and that's when the fees start piling up. And so a late $300 assessment can soon turn into a $3,000 bill, and people end up losing their homes.
This is very disruptive and stressful to a family. You didn't pay your fee, your fine, or what have you, and now, boom, you find out that some law firm has bought your property out from under you. But DTND, they're not doing anything illegal, right?
Correct.
So they're just using the system, and they're able to do this deal.
Right. And the way it works is that they will come in and purchase a house, like I said, for perhaps a dollar more than what the HOA was owed. And then either they'll strike a deal with the former homeowner to buy their house back for a profit for DT&D, or they'll evict the homeowner in many cases, and then rent the property out to a new tenant and collect rent.
Until it's foreclosed on by the bank.
Right. And the banks have been very slow to foreclose on homes because of the financial crisis. They've been overwhelmed with the number of foreclosures. And in essence, DT&D is taking advantage of the foot dragging by the banks to collect the rent as long as possible.
So, Professor McKenzie, is this an unusual story, or things like this happening around the country with HOAs and their fees and people not paying them and then getting foreclosed on because of that?
Oh, no. This has been going on for decades. Homeowner association collections is a sort of a subspecialty in the legal profession. There are attorneys who are basically collections agents, and they do this all the time. And so they have computer-generated letters that they send to people, and they always charge almost always exorbitant amounts of money, considering that, you know, the letter takes 2 seconds to send out, and they charge, you know, hundreds of dollars for it. And they pile up these legal fees. And so when they foreclose, they seek to have all their legal fees paid. I mean, the wrinkle that's interesting about this is the way they're finding a way to do this while not losing everything to the holder of the first mortgage, because they're taking advantage of this, you know, the reluctance of banks to step forward with the foreclosure. Normally, this would trigger the first lien holder, and they would step in, and often they manage to get most of the equity out of this, or all the equity. But obviously, this firm has found a way to make money off it for a while.
Any idea how big of a problem this is nationwide?
Well, homeowner association foreclosures, particularly when people had more home equity, have been a huge issue. There have been many, many cases of people being foreclosed on where they were only too happy to pay, say, $120 in back assessments. But in order to extinguish the lien and prevent the foreclosure, you have to also pay the association's lawyer and all the other fees they've added on, which in some cases, seriously, can be $20,000 or $30,000 by the time all is said and done. And I testified before a Maryland legislative committee in a bill that was eventually passed to limit the amount that attorneys could charge in these situations. We had one situation where a $200 towing fee for towing a car ended up with a $70,000 attorney fee bill attached to it.
God, that's amazing. I'm going to get some callers. We've got a lot of callers. Let's get them on the line. Adriana wants to join the conversation. Adriana, welcome to The Source on the Air.
Hi. Yes, I agree with that gentleman right there, because that's kind of the same situation that we experienced, where there was an attorney also involved, and the fees ended up being so high that, this particular client that had a horrible experience with the HOA lost her condo. They foreclosed on it, and then, of course, Wells Fargo came in because they were the first lien holder, and we did a short sale. And then, but the lawyers and everybody had a fee in there, and it was ridiculous. They were embezzling the money. Actually, the HOA was. They had people on the board that did not know what they were doing. Everyone was paying their fees, and they had no money. They had a pool that was never fixed. This client's condo was ruined because they never fixed a drainage problem. It was just horrendous. But they got away with it. She lost her condo, and who knows what they're doing now. So it is a problem.
Adriana, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. So, Professor McKenzie, there's no licensing. There's no regulatory agency. Right. Why not?
Well, the people, the industry that is making money off the dysfunction in associations does not want regulation, and they are very, very well organized in every state to prevent regulation from being enacted. To the best of my knowledge, we only have 10 states in the District of Columbia where they even have licensing of property managers. So in most of the states in this country, property managers who handle, in some cases, millions of dollars in association revenues do not even have licenses. There is no background check, no educational requirements, nothing in most of the states. And You couldn't sell a hot dog on a street corner in a major city without getting a license to do it, but you can handle millions of dollars of people's money and make all sorts of decisions about their lives with no license. And, you know, there has to be some kind of state oversight of these professionals, or this industry eventually is going to commit suicide. I mean, eventually people, I think, will be afraid to buy into these associations for fear of predatory practices. There needs to be licensing of managers. There needs to be oversight and some kind of state ombudsman or something, which you only have in four states, where owners can turn for, without having to file a massive civil lawsuit, to just say, hey, I'm being mistreated here. Will someone look into it?
All right, I'm going to get one quick caller, last caller on the air. Jesse, we're short on time. What do you got to tell us, buddy?
Yes, sir. I'm not going to go into all of some of the bigger problems that everybody's talking about, although they're very serious. But, you know, one of the biggest things that really annoys people that spend a lot of money, you know, their life savings and get into a nice subdivision, is that these homeowner associations don't do their job. You know, you got cars parked out on blocks. You know, people don't cut their yard. You know, you got to go through SAPD and file all kinds of reports for dogs that bark all the time. And, you know, it's just like, it. You know, you get a $200,000-$300,000 home, you know, and then you got to deal with all of this unpleasantness all over the place. And there's so much of filing of papers and this and that.
Right. All right, Jesse, so you are trying to get out of your homeowners association. Good luck on that. Appreciate that. Thanks for calling in. You know, if you don't live in an HOA, you could just talk to your neighbors. Everyone's pretty reasonable, I found. Thank you so much for joining us. Patrick Danner, San Antonio Express News. Keep that great story coming. It's been great writing, great reporting. Evan McKenzie, professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, author of Beyond Privatopia, Rethinking Residential Private Government. This is The Source.
The 2013 Water Saver Landscape Tour is October 5th from 9 to 3 with free admission. The self-guided tour includes 9 unique garden styles. Learn more about water-saving garden ideas and the latest landscape coupons offered by SAWS. Addresses and more at watersaverlandscapetour.org. This nonprofit message was underwritten by SAWS. The San Antonio Clean Technology Forum presents the Energy Water Nexus Forum, October 15th at the historic Pearl Stable. Panelists Mayor Julian Castro, Judge Nelson Wolf, Lyle Larson, Doyle Benaby, and Robert Puente will discuss policies and plans for meeting San Antonio's interdependent energy and water needs of the future. Registration at sacleantech.org. This nonprofit message was underwritten by ESD and Associates Digital Marketing.